Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 35. My name is John. I will occupy. I will help you die. I will run through you. Now I rule you too. So, it's been decided. The highway to hell it is. In the time of my transition from a disenfranchised Republican supporter to a burgeoning libertarian, I often said the difference between voting Democrat versus voting Republican is like choosing between taking the highway or the scenic route to hell. Now, don't interpret that as having favored Romney in the last election. I've said in a previous podcast, America is about 170 degrees off course from the Constitution. Mitt Romney would have been a correction of about 10 to 20 degrees. We're still lost. We're still off course. Either way, we're screwed. Or, as a Jay Leno joke writer put it, we're headed toward the fiscal cliff, and we just elected a guy whose campaign slogan is forward. The fiscal cliff, what a load of crap. The debate is over how much of a tax increase they will force on people, and at what rate they are going to increase spending. Let me expand on that. The debate is over how much of your rightfully earned income you will be allowed to keep by the government. If you're okay with somebody else being forced to surrender their earnings, then you have no argument when it happens to you. And it will. If you don't believe me, here's a quote from former Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean. The truth is, everybody needs to pay more taxes, not just the rich. And it's a good start. But we're not going to get out of this deficit problem unless we raise taxes across the board. Since its inception, the personal income tax has been a tool of collectivists to divide and conquer, to foster class warfare, to turn people against each other. It plays off and relies on greed. And most people buy right into the rhetoric. That's why we have people wanting to take from the rich. That's why we have rich who plug into the government machine for profit. That's why we have rich and poor voting for politicians who will give them the most goodies. That's why we have the delusion of redistributed wealth. And all too many people let the government manipulate them into stirring up hatred and resentment for one another. And spending cuts? There are no spending cuts. Only cuts in the rate of spending increases. Okay, follow the bouncing ball. Let's say last year I spent $5,000 on Christmas presents, something that would never happen, but that's another podcast. I vow to cut my Christmas spending this year. So I only spent $6,800. Isn't that great? Now, you should rightfully question me. You should say that if I were going to cut spending from last year, I would have had to have spent less than $5,000. Oh, no, no. I explained to you. I had intended to spend $7,000. So I really cut $200 for my spending. Don't you get it? Instead of increasing my spending by $2,000, I only increased it by $1,800. So that's actually a 10% spending cut. And that kind of bullshit line is what our government has fed us for decades. There are no spending cuts, only meaningless snippets shaved off spending increases. Going over the fiscal cliff? We are already over the cliff. It's just a matter of finding somebody smart enough to pull the ripcord before we splatter on the canyon floor. While I'm at it, let me get something straight here. Let me be clear. Barack Obama is a sick hypocrite. The Supreme Court ruled that Obamacare is legal. However, it can only be legal if it is considered a tax. This federal law forces everyone to either buy insurance or pay a fine. Therefore, Obama has already increased taxes on every person in America. He's increased taxes on the rich, he's increased taxes on the middle class, and he has increased taxes on the poor. And now, he's trying to claim the moral high ground by fomenting malice toward a specific group of people, in this case, rich people. He's hoping the facade of class warfare will hide the fact that he is already guilty of the very sin he warns against others committing. Let me go back to that Christmas spending that I mentioned a moment ago. Let me give you another example. Let's say, theoretically, I decide to spend an ass load of money on Christmas. Do I have to buy presents? Is it required? No. Of course it isn't. But in my mind, I have changed Christmas gifts from a luxury to a necessity. So I go out and I start buying for all my friends and family. Hey, this is pretty fun. I mean, we are told it's better to give than receive, right? So I buy something for all my family and all my close friends. But you know, it's not enough. Let's be honest, there are some people that I like more. So I want to give them more. So I go back out and I buy more. Better presents for my preferred people. In order to do that, though, I drained my bank account savings. But hey, I'm giving things to people. It makes them happy. It makes them like me. So, why stop at Christmas? Why stop at just gifts? I know. I'll keep giving things to people after Christmas. All my preferred people have to do is tell me what they need and I'll get it for them. But wait, my bank account is empty. No worries, I'll just put it on my credit card. And who cares if these preferred people start coming to me with things they don't really need, just things that they want. Who cares? I'm popular. I'll just max out my credit card. In fact, I better open a few more accounts so I can charge some more stuff for my preferred people. But why just stop at friends and family? You know, I'll bet some of those neighbors down the street who I don't know too well would really like me if I started giving them stuff too. Maybe they need a car payment or a house payment. They would really like me if I did things for them also. So, I'll pay some of their bills too. In fact, I think I should take out some more credit cards. Not to charge more stuff to them, but to pay the minimum amounts due on my other cards. And you know, I really like some of these store owners I do business with. I think I'll give them double what they sell me. Kind of like a tip, I guess. It's all on the credit card anyway. I'm feeling generous. In fact, I'll even give some people seed money for businesses they've pitched to me. Who cares if they succeed or fail? course. Now my friends are even coming to me to pay for their groceries. I better find some way to pay for this stuff. I mean, after all, I don't want to lose my popularity. Hell, I don't know if some of my friends even work anymore since I just pass out the cash. Pass out the cash. That's it. I'll just print my own money. People just need to see the dollars. They don't pay too much attention that there's nothing real behind it. I got a maid now. Everybody thinks I'm awesome. They just come to me with whatever they want, and I either charge it on my credit cards or throw some counterfeit money their way. Fuck it. I'm going to promise to take care of whatever they need. Oh boy, this can't go on forever, though. After a while, even all those credit cards run out. People are starting to get wise to that fake money, too. Damn it. Even if I gave every single penny I earn from work toward my debt, it will take over 6 years to pay it off. And that's just what I already owe. I've promised another 48 years of my salary to people. Every penny from work. I got it! Here's my plan. Tell me what you think. Since I don't make enough to pay off my debt or my promises, I'm going to go into work Monday morning. I'm going to go into my boss's office, and I'm going to put a gun to his head and demand that he give me a raise. What do you think? How does that sound to you? Is that a great idea or what? You gotta be thinking this is a farce, right? That this is just one insane decision after another. If you knew somebody who was doing something so blatantly irresponsible, wouldn't you do anything to get him or her to come to his or her senses? Of course, if you or I were to actually try a crazy scheme like that, we'd find ourselves behind bars. But this isn't a farce. This is all too real. This is our government. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution specifically lines out the federal government's responsibilities. If it doesn't fall under something listed in Article 1, Section 8, it is federal government overreach, a Christmas present, period. The responsibility should go to the states or to the people. The federal government has no right to take these things on. But they don't care. It makes them popular. It gives them power. It keeps them in office. That's why they give the countless gifts, the paid bills, and so on. Gifts to their preferred citizens, who return the favor in votes. Gifts to their friends to push for pork barrel projects, to the point where nobody even knows where all the money has gone. Gifts to neighbors, other countries who should be taking care of their own affairs. Overspending to business. Everybody knows about the history of sweet government contracts that spend far more than what is needed. Or seed money to companies. Solyndra, anyone? Why not throw cash around when money borrowed from countries like China is treated like a spoiled teenager's credit card? They would try to deny they have counterfeit money, but the worthless tender now being printed by the Federal Reserve is in essence the same thing. And the boss? The boss is the taxpayer. Or at least the ones who pay taxes. And the gun? The gun is the force of the federal tax code. The politicians have decided that they have to force people to surrender more of their earned wealth in order to pay for their harebrained schemes. And if the government took every single penny of the income tax collected, in other words, the government's salary, and put it only toward the current debt and nothing else, it would take them over 6 years to pay off that debt. But the unfunded liabilities of Social Security, prescription drugs, and Medicare, those three things alone, would take over 48 years to repay. And that's assuming no more debt would be incurred in the meantime. Stated differently, if your gross income is $50,000 a year, and you spent like the federal government, you would currently owe on your credit cards over $300,000 and would have a home loan in the amount of $2.4 million due over the next 2 to 3 decades. If that kind of debt sounds irresponsible to you, why would you think it a good idea to put more money in the hands of the bureaucrats, the same people who caused the problem to begin with? There is no talk of any real spending cuts. There is no admission of guilt to running federal programs that are unconstitutional. There is no austerity. There is no backing for any return to a small federal government that confines itself only to what it is expressly allowed to do. Why? Because the past 100 years of government giving away gifts to its preferred people has made it immensely popular. It has reached epidemic proportions of brainwashing generations into believing government is the best and often only solution to whatever woes you have or perceive. If government doesn't step in, we won't have health care. If government doesn't step in, people will lose jobs. If government doesn't step in, we won't have anything for our retirement. Forget the fact that it is because of government that health care, jobs, and retirement have become more and more difficult to obtain. But so many believe the propaganda. So many listen to the so-called experts opine about the glories of government policies, who just happen to also have a financial stake in the enactment of those policies. It is so frustrating, and yet so understandable. When that is the dominant message, and in some cases the only message, what else should you expect? In the debates, a throwaway line by Mitt Romney set people off, and it snowballed into all kinds of coverage about the merits of government funding. People were so passionate about their side, you would have thought it was something important. But it wasn't. It was the culmination of government interference and the perfect example of what happens when government controls the message. It is so ridiculous that it is the perfect example for the point that I will eventually make. I liked Sesame Street as a kid. I actually preferred Captain Kangaroo and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but I could certainly relate to Cookie Monster. I understand the desire for educational programming. But we're looking at a situation where we've become so used to the way things are that we think there's no other option. How much does it cost to produce Sesame Street? Well, the annual production cost in 2011 for the 26 one-hour episodes was $14 million. In 2011, they got $19 million from federal sources. Well, simple math tells you that you could easily cut $5 million, right? But that's not their only source of revenue. Donations for Sesame Street in 2011 came in over $40 million. doesn't seem to be much of a need for that $19 million from the government, does it? Oh. But there's also the $42 million from distribution fees and royalties in 2011. And $47 million from licensing their products. More on that later. So Sesame Street brings in nearly 10 times its production costs without having to take a penny from the government. But it takes the government money anyway. Besides, if they didn't have public funding, could they even stay on public broadcasting? I'm sure PBS will find a way, because Sesame Street helps justify PBS's existence. PBS is funded, not so surprisingly, by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That corporation gets $450 million annually from the government. There was a lot of speculation that Sesame Street could fund all of PBS. I don't think those numbers add up. But shouldn't they at least fund what they can? I mean, for a group that preaches giving up wealth for the benefit of the poor, Sesame Street should set the example by giving up their profit for the sake of the other shows. Cut $120 million from the government funding right there. Oh, but wherever will we get our valued children's programming? Here's the tricky part. This is similar to education. When the government funds it, the government controls it. And when such a dynamic exists between the government and the television program, isn't the expectation for the program to conform to the government's wishes? Think about it. How many government-sponsored shows advocate for a constitutionally limited small government? How many promote strong self-reliance and individual responsibility? And how many, especially the children's programs, promote communal reliance? How many promote running to authority at the first hint of a problem? Not that Sesame Street is a valueless program, but I get no personal benefit from it. And if I get no benefit, why should my taxes have to pay for it? Especially when its donations alone would fund it. Shouldn't good shows merit their own continuation? I know, tell that to Arrested Development. But even that could be coming back as a movie. Family Guy was brought back 2 years after it was canceled. Put out a product that people want, and you won't need to use the force of government tax law to take people's money to fund your product. But Sesame Street wouldn't survive if it wasn't on PBS. Are you kidding me? With all the people who raise holy hell about the prospect of having government funding removed, you'd think they had enough viewers to be number one in prime time. Again, if you're putting out a good product, people will watch. Besides, PBS isn't the only place to find Sesame Street. They have their own network, in conjunction with NBC Universal and a private equity firm called Apax. 24-hour children's programming with video on demand and a website. Yeah, these people really need government funding. But the detractors will tell us that children's programming on private networks is driven by toy sales and merchandise. And what exactly is Tickle Me Elmo? Take a few moments to go through the toy aisle at Walmart or Target or wherever the hell you want and focus on the 6 and under toys and look at all the crap they have. Trust me, if they could find a way to turn Mr. Snuffleupagus into a transformer, they would. Children are just as subject to commercials for Let's Rock Elmo as I was for Superpowers action figures. And just for the record, I am so happy Elmo came along after I was too old to watch Sesame Street. That has to be the most annoying character this side of Barney. And maybe that's it. Maybe the magic is gone for me. Maybe having been an amateur puppeteer has forever shattered the suspension of reality that these are more than just scraps of fabric. Maybe I'm too grown up to entertain the notion that the world of Sesame Street is anything but an immature fantasy. But that's certainly not the case for a lot of other people. With the backlash at the mere suggestion of federal funding cuts, we saw the rise of the cult of Big Bird. These people preach Big Bird, Sesame Street, PBS as some kind of sacred right. I mean, Million Muppet March? That's really your cause? Of all the things in this nation to rally support for? The right to protect yourself as you see fit? No. The right to enter into a private social contract without government interference? Nah. The right to keep the fruits of your labors and distribute them as you wish? Nope. The right to express yourself? Uh-uh. The right to be left alone? Nah. The right to be secure in your person and your property? No. The right to put into your body what you wish, whether that be a hallucinogen or raw milk? Nah. All of those things are being taken away from us by politicians in the throes of power lust. And your cause celeb is government-funded puppets. Still not convinced? How about this? Remember Amanda Clayton? Does that name sound familiar to you? Do you remember the story about the lotto winner taking government assistance? Amanda Clayton was the Michigan woman who won $1 million from the lottery. She bought a new home with the money. And then it was discovered she was still taking government assistance. She stated she was entitled to it because she was still unemployed. And now she had not just one, but two houses to take care of. That's Sesame Street. They won the lottery. They don't need government handouts anymore. Despite all the childhood heartstrings that they try to tug, the truth is they have no business taking a single penny of your hard-earned salary. But we still get the defenders, and we certainly have the willing politicians looking to curry public favor. Of course government wants to fund puppets. Government loves things that they can fully control while giving the illusion of autonomy. If we can't cut this, how can we ever cut anything in this overbloated government monstrosity? If we can't decide that one ultra-rich television show can do without government assistance. If people are so close to the tree that they can't see the forest, what chance do we have? We're not headed toward the fiscal cliff. We're over the fiscal cliff. We're headed toward the canyon floor like a clueless cartoon coyote. The Constitution is our parachute. The ripcord is a simple process. Quit interfering with other people's money. Get out of their wallets. Quit stealing their money to buy votes with your reckless spending. And Sesame Street may be the topic, but this spending bullshit has been going on long before Bert and Ernie ever shared a bedroom. We wouldn't have gotten to this point if any president, any Congress, had been bold enough to do the right thing. They could have put a stop to this, but they cared too much about getting into and retaining power so they could give more gifts to their cronies. There is no end to the blame. And sadly, there is zero chance that will change in the next 4 years. The Republicans have been saying Obama is a failure. But there's one way you can look at it that would make him a complete success. If you look at it from Obama's perspective. From his perspective, he's doing a great job. Seriously. I know, people have been attributing that to narcissism or ignorance. But given what he has told us, he's doing exactly what he promised. This is a man who promised the fundamental transformation of the United States of America. This is a man who promised his plan would make energy prices necessarily skyrocket. This is a man who said he would be willing to wait 20 years for his plan of a single-payer healthcare system to come to fruition. And most people let him get away with it. They blithely give him a pass. Why? Because he's cool. He's popular. He's charismatic. He's the master. We're the puppets. And with the way TSA is progressing, we're just a couple of years away from literally having government's fist up our ass. Are you a puppet? If the government got its hand out of your business, out of your affairs, would you crumple to a lifeless heap? Or would you finally be free to do with your life as you see fit? Aren't you ready to find out? This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.